We're on Daf Kuf Lamed Tes Amud Aleph, and we're up to Tanya, which is the second line from the top. And here we have an Agadita, but that's only part of this Daf. Now, this Agadita that we're going to learn is about the troubles that befall Klal Yisrael and the cause, the main sin that brings about these troubles, and it has to do with judges who deviate from justice and they pervert justice. Tanya, we learned in the Braisa, Rabbi Yossi ben Elisha Omer, Imra Isa Dar, Shetzaros Rabos Bozalov. You want to figure out what was the main cause that brought about these tsaros? Tsei Bedok Bedayoni Yisrael. Check out the judges of Israel. Are they proper? Are they upright? And are they dedicated to righteousness and to truth? Shekol Peronius Sheboli Olam. Whenever you see, Peronius means evil or destruction, punishment, that comes to the world, Loba Ela Bishvil Dayani Yisrael. The cause of these troubles are judges in Israel that pervert justice. Shenemar Posgim Micha Shimuna Zos Roshe Beis Yaakov Uktsine Beis Yisrael. Hear this now, O heads of the house of Jacob, the officers of the house of Israel. Hametaavim Mishpat. They despise justice. You would think that if anyone wants to uphold justice, it would be the judges of Israel. Veskol Yeshor Yakeshu. Not only do they detest justice, they also pervert justice. Bonet Zion Bidomim, and they really build up Zion with blood, meaning those who suffer as a result of the perversion of justice, as if their blood was spilled. V'Yushalayim B'Avla, and they build Jerusalem with iniquity through Oshek and Onah, he says. Rasheha B'Shochad Yishpotu. The leaders of Israel, the judges, are guilty of taking bribes. Kohanecha, Kohaneha, and even the Kohanim, B'mechir Yoru. Right, the Poskin Yeshaya indicates that Sifsei Kohen Yishmu Das, that the Kohanim were in charge of giving horos, of ruling on any sort of legal questions, and they could be bought off. Whoever gives them more money, they'll paskin the way he wants to hear the psak. Unevieha bekesef yiksomu. And false prophets can be also, I think it means bought off with money. Bekesef means with money. Yiksomu. So they'll give you the prophecy that you want to hear as long as you pay them the price. And then, the chutzpah on top of it all, Al Hashem Yishayenu. They will rely on God, as if to say that despite their perversion of justice, nevertheless, they'll rely on God, that God is compassionate. The next part of the pasuk, which is not here in the Gemara, says, Lamar, they will declare, Halo Hashem Bekirbenu, God is amongst us, Lo Tavo Aleinu Ra'ah, no evil will befall us. Such a ha'azis panim, such a chutzpah, that they rely on God that He will not destroy the Beis HaMikdash and so forth and so on, because they think that God is with them. The Bryce explains, Rishayim Hem, these are evildoers. Ellen, despite that, Tolu Bitchonam, they rely on Misha Omer Vayolam, Ha'olam, that the divine being, the creator, will not punish them. Is Lefichach, because they violate three different Averos, so we have these three categories of the judges, and the Kohanim, and the Nevi'im, is therefore God says, maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu Aleihem Shalosh Peronios, there are going to be three punishments, Keneged Shalosh Aver Shebiyodon, the parallel, the three sins that are in their hands. Shenemar, because Micha HaNovi in that same chapter foretells the destruction that God is going to bring about with His wrath. Lachem, therefore, Biglalchem, because of you, Tzion Sodati Choresh, the enemies of the Jewish people will plow Jerusalem in ruins, as if it were a field that has to be plowed. Yushalayim in Tia. Yushalayim will come to become heaps of churva, of ruins. Vaharabayis libomos yar. And the Temple Mount shall be like the high points of the forest. There's another way of saying it'll be in ruins. And here, in the commentaries, they try to figure out how these three punishments parallel the three sins that brought about these punishments. So, for example, if you talk about the punishment of Tzion Kisod Tichrash be plowed as a field, then this will correspond to the perversion of justice, because the Sanhedrin, the High Court of Israel, sat in the Lishkas HaGozes on the Temple Mount. And if you talk about the Kohanim who deviate from Torah rulings, so that's going to be the destruction of Yerushalayim, because Ki Mitzion Teitzei Torah, the source of Torah is Yerushalayim. And the prophets who are paid off in order to prophesize whatever you want you to hear for the highest bidder, that will be punished with the destruction of the temple itself, of the Beis HaMikdash, because the Mikdash is the Makom HaShos HaShchina from which Nevuah emanates. V'ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mashre Shchinoso Al Yisrael Ad Sheyichlu Shoftim V'Shotrim Roim Yisrael. And the Divine Presence will not be restored to Israel until the termination of the corrupt judges and those officers. Shenemar, Poskin Shayo Anovi, Vashiva Yodi Olayech, Lakoscha Mako Achar Mako, Vietrov Kabor Sigayech Asir Mimech Esapsolis. See, Shayo Anovi tells us, in the name of God, I will turn my hand against you. I'll clean away your dross as with soap. I will remove all your tin. That's called Bedilayach, is tin. And then, Ashiva Shoftayach Rishona. And then, I'll restore your judges as they were in the first place. V'yotzech kivatchila. And your advisors as they were in the beginning. And Achrechen, the end of the pasuk says, Yikore lecha ir hatzedek kirya nemana. You will be called a city of righteousness, a faithful city. So the Shechina will only rest amongst Klal Yisrael after the corrupt judges will be replaced by righteous judges. Amar Ula, En Yerushalayim nifta ela bitztaka. Jerusalem will only be redeemed through charity, through tzedakah. Shenemar again a pasuk in Yeshayo, Tzion v'mishpat tipode v'shaver b'tzedakah. Zion will be redeemed through justice and her returnees through charity. And that's why, by the way, on Pesach, there's so much an emphasis on tzedakah, because Pesach is the chag that commemorates the ultimate geula, and that will be brought about through tzedakah. Amar Rav Papa, this is another drasha on the pasuk that we brought earlier. E batle yehire. Batle means the destruction of, or the undermining of yehire. Yehira yaira is gaiva, is conceit. When conceit will be undermined, then batle am gushe. And Amgushe will disappear. So what's Amgushe? So he translates Amgushe here in the name of Rashi as Kofrim, those who deny Mesitim, and they try to entice the Jewish people to violate Avodah Zarah, worship idols, and make the Jewish people hated by God. All this will terminate, this negative wrath against the Jewish people, when conceit will be destroyed. And those are the ones who think that they can violate justice. Ibatli Dayani, if those terrible judges that pervert justice will be terminated, then Batli Gzirpate. Rashi explains, Yibotlu Shotre Avodas Kochovim Hachovtim Es Yisrael B'Maklos. These are the forces of the enemies of Israel, the adversaries who are idol worshippers. They are running after Israel with sticks to try to beat us up. And that will terminate when we terminate all those unrighteous judges. And Rav Pop explains his own drush, and he says, Ibatli Yehire Batli Amgushi. How do I know that with the termination of conceit, we will terminate all these Ovdei Avodah Zarah that try to make us worship idols and be hated by God? Midechsiv, because it says there in Yeshayo Anovi, Vetzrof Kabar Sigayich, and like soap, I will clean off your dross. And it means I will clean off all these gasei ruach, these conceited people, and then asira kol b'dilayich. And then I will remove all the dross that separates between God and Klal Yisrael. And that which I said, Rav Papa says, the batli dayoni batli gzirpate, that with the termination of these wicked judges, we will no longer be beaten up by our adversaries. Midechsiv again, another pasuk in Tanakh. This one is from Tzfanya Novi. Heisir Hashem mishpatayich pina oivayich. God will remove shoftayich, those judges who are evil, who pervert justice, and then pina oivayich, he will turn his face towards the enemies of the Jewish people who try to destroy us. Amar Rav Milai Mishum Rav Elazar Reb Shimon Maidich Siv. What does Poskin Yeshaya mean? Shavar Hashem Mate Rishoim Shevet Moshlim. Hashem has broken the staff of the wicked. What is that a reference to? He says, Shavar Hashem Mate Rishoim Elu Adayonim. What does he mean that the staff of the wicked, this is the staff of the Dayonim Shenasu Makel Lechazonehem, which literally means they are like a stick in the hands of their officers. In other words, they like serve their officers, and when their officers come with a claim and so forth and so on, they will uphold that claim completely deviating from justice. And then it says Shevet Moshlim, which means the rod of the rulers. Elu Talmidei Chacham Shemishpachos HaDayonim HaRishoyim. These are Torah scholars in the extended families of corrupt judges. So the rulers referred to wicked judges whose family members are Torah scholars, and their rods, their support for the Torah scholars, see their appointment to the judiciary and cover up their mistakes and defend their decisions. Rashi says, Shei Meshamshim Kemakel Ukeegrof Biyada Moshlim Adayonim Shaidei Osam Talmidei Chachamim Minu Es Adayonim Arishoyim. That these scholars allowed for the appointment of these evil judges. And they try to defend their what's the word I'm looking for? In Hebrew, it's called akum. They're twisted judgments, and they try to justify them. Marzutra Omar, he has a different take on the pasuk Shevet Moshlim Eilu Tamid Chamshem Malamdim Hilchas Tzibur LeDayone Bur. These are Torah scholars who will pass the Torah on to those who are ignorant, unlearned, and appoint them as judges. Like they allow them to like pass the exam, so to speak, and they get ordained. Omar Abelazar ben Malai Mishum Reish Lakish Maidich Siv. What does the pasuk mean? Again, in Yeshayahu Anovi, it says, Ki kapechem nigo'alu badam. Your hands are sullied with blood. That's bosechem bi'avon, and your fingers with sin. And then the pasuk says, Sifsosechem dibru sheker. Your lips have spoken falsehood, lishonechem avla tege, your tongue mutters wickedness. So Reish Lakish goes through this pasuk. Al kapechem nigo'alu badam. What does it mean? Your hands are sullied by blood. Elu hadayonim. These are corrupt judges. Sheposhtim eskapeim lekabel shochad. And when it says kapechem, it means they open up their hands to receive bribes, and they deviate from justice in order to give a ruling in favor of the person who pays them the highest bribe. And it's as if they took their neshamas away. That's why it's called negalu badon. And what does it mean? I suppose sechem be avon, and your fingers with sin. Elu sofrei adayonim. These are the scribes who are in charge of writing the documents in the courts. And again, they'll deviate from justice if you pay them enough. And then when it says, if so sechem dibru sheker, your lips have spoken lies, elu orchei adayonim. These are the kind of lawyers that try to put words into the mouth of the litigants to falsify their claim. And again, bringing about the deviation from truth and justice. And finally, shonechem avla tege. What does it mean that your tongue mutters wickedness? Elu bale adinim. That's referring to the litigants themselves, who instead of admitting the truth, they will come up with false claims. The Omar of Malai Mishum Rabbi Yitzchak Migdalah, from the city of Migdalah. Miyom sheperesh Yosef Meechav. From the day that the brothers sold Joseph to the Ishmaelim, lo tam tam yayin, he abstained from drinking wine until they brought Binyamin down to Mitzrayim. Dechsiv, when Yaakov bestows his blessing on Yosef, at the end of Vayechi, it says, ulekodkod nazir echav, upon the head of the exile or the nazir from his brothers. In other words, from the time that his brothers sold him, he became a nazir. He would not drink wine. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanin Omar, af hein, even the Shvatim lo tam utam yayin. Even they felt that guilt that prompted them to accept upon themselves the Naziris from Yayin Dechsiv. It says in the Pasuk, referring to the day that the brothers brought Binyamin down to Mitzrayim, Vayishtu, Vayishkaru imo. And they drank and became intoxicated with him. And from the fact that it says imo with him, michlal, it implies the ad ha'idna, until this point, lo, they did not drink wine. Ve'idach, and Rav Balai, who said that Rav Yosef didn't drink wine, he holds that the pasuk vayishkru imo should be read in the following way: deshchirus hudlo havi, they didn't get intoxicated. But shtia mia hava, but they did drink wine. And finally, to end this agadata, the Omar Rav Maloy Bischar, when Moshe Rabbeinu is given the task to become the Redeemer of Israel, and keep in mind he's 3 years younger than Aaron, God tells Moshe at the Sneh, V'rocha v'samach b'libo, when Aaron will find out that you were appointed as the Redeemer of Israel, he will have genuine, true Simcha Saleh. And therefore, Zocha l'choshe mishpat al-libo, he merited having the breastplate on his lave, because the lave of Aaron is the lave that is so excluded from jealousy that he's happy with Moshe Rabbeinu's appointment, even though he's in the older brother. And now, Rabbosai, we get back to Masechta Shabbos, so to speak. Now, one of the things that we discussed yesterday was called a kila. A kila is a canopy bed, and it has poles, and then you stretch a canopy over these poles, and the problem is that it's very similar to OL, to creating a structure. And we said that if the roof of this canopy has a tefach, then it's considered an ohel. Sholchulei b'nei Bashchar, the people who lived in a city called Bashchar, sent three questions to Levi. Number one is Kila Mahu, what's the law of a canopy? Or am I allowed to open up a canopy on Shabbos? Number two, Kishusa b'karma mayu, this is a Kilayim question. We have something called hops. And the question is, what is the status of hops? They come from bushes, and they may have the status of a tree, or shall we consider them as a yerek, as a vegetable? And the nafkamina is that vegetables cannot be planted within close proximity to a vineyard. That's kilayim. But on the other hand, if these plants, which we call hops, are considered not a vegetable, but something like a tree, it's the produce of a tree, because they grow from these bushes, therefore there's no Iser Kilayim. And the third question they asked was, Mes b'yontiv mahu, are we allowed to bury the dead on Yontiv? But unfortunately, Ad Azil, until the messenger arrived at Noah, at Levi's house, to bring him the questions, Noch Nafshi Levi, Levi had passed away. Omar Shmuel le Rav Menashe. So Shmuel at that time turns to Rav Menashe and he says, Ichachmis Shlachlu, if you're smart enough and you can figure out the answers, then send the answers back. And Rav Menashe offered a ruling on each of these three questions. Number one, Shalach Lehu, he sent him an answer about the kila, about the canopy. Chazarnu al kol tzidei kilo. We looked in every single angle and we analyzed it from every perspective. We couldn't come up with any heter lo matzinu ba lo tzad heter. We couldn't permit it in any way. So immediately before we get to the answer to the second and then the third, the Gemara interjects and says, I don't understand this answer of Rav Menashe. V'lishlachu kider rami bach yechezkel. And you may recall that yesterday we learned that if you, the canopy itself, if it's folded and it's attached to ropes with a pole, and all you have to do is stretch it out over, you're allowed to do that on Shabbos, because that's not creating an ohel. The ohel was already set up before Shabbos. So Rav Masharshia answers, Lemi lefi she'enom b'nei Torah. It means that the people of the city of Bashchar were not great scholars, and the fear was that if Rav Masharshia would be lenient and allow them to open up a canopy under the conditions that are set forth by Rami Bar Yechezkel, they might extend that and mistakenly they'll open up a canopy from scratch, as we would say, and set up the poles and put up the canopy. They're not sensitive enough to understand the distinctions here and the fine print here about when it's mutter, when it's aser. But according to the strict letter of the law, for sure Rav Masharshia accepts Rami Bar Yechezkel, and in such case you're allowed to open up the canopy by taking the rope and unraveling the folded parts of the curtains on that make up the canopy. Kshusa v'karma, getting back to the second question, are you allowed to plant kishusa, which are hops, in close proximity to a vineyard? And his answer was irbuva. Irbuva means the Aramaic word for kalayim, for a mixture, meaning it's absolutely forbidden. So once again, the Gemara interjects with the question and objection, v'lishlachu k'Rabbi Tarfon. Although the Chachamim are machmir, as you put it, but Rabbi Tarfon was mekil. And that's a brisa. The Sanya Kishos, what's the status of hops? Rabbi Tarfon Omer ain kalayim b'keret. If you plant them in close proximity to a vineyard, there's no violation of kalayim, meaning they are trees and not vegetables. Chachamim Omerim kalayim b'keret, that they are considered vegetables, and therefore you're not allowed to plant them next to a vineyard. So the Gemara is objecting, why were you completely ignoring the Shita of Rabbi Tarfon? Now you and I know that when there's a machlokas between a Yochin and a Rabbin, we always pass like the majority, and the Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Tarfon. So what's the Gemara's question? The answer is, we have another principle that distinguishes in the laws of Zeraim, agricultural law, between Eretz Yisrael and Chutzlaretz. Kaimel unkel amekel v'aretz halacha kamoso b'chutzlaretz. Whenever there's a machlokas about Zeraim, and there's a mekil, although in Eretz Yisrael we're going to have to be machmir, because mitzvahs hatluyos baretz are d'oraisa, but in chutz laretz, like kelayim in chutz laretz, is only d'rabbanan, and we pass like the mekil. So what's with Rav Masharshi? And once again, the answer is, l'fi she'edem b'dei Torah. They would not make these distinctions between, you know, chutz laretz and Eretz Yisrael. They would think that there's no question in the mind of Rav Masharshia that the halachic ruling is that hops are considered trees and not vegetables. The Gemara says, Machriz Rav, and here the Gemara is again presenting this machlokas about the status of hops. Rav made an announcement, Haiman deboy lemizrik shusa b'karmel lizra. Rav said that he was addressing the people in Bavel, and he said that if you want to plant hops near a vineyard, go ahead and do so. You have my full backing. Rav Amram Chasido, the Rav Amram, the great Chasid, man gediluye, he was opposed, and he said we should punish anyone who would do so. And Rav Masharshia yoev le pruto letinok nochri vizorale. Rav Masharshia found a kind of a compromise position, and he would pay a small sum of money to a young non-Jewish child to do the actual planting, so that on one hand he was lenient, and again the product of this planting is going to be mutter, there's no iser kelayim. The actual planting he wanted to be done through a goy. Now we have to figure out, why did he choose a child of a goy? And if it was because he was a child, he could have chosen a Jewish child, who's also not bar mitzvah. So where it says, Velite le Latinok Yisrael, why not give this money to a Jewish child and he'll plant the hops? So where it says, Osi le Misrach, when he gets older, he's going to remember that when he was a child, at the age of 10, 11, and 12, he was planting hops near the vineyard. And his father has a vineyard, he's going to plant hops near the vineyard. So we can't, this has a lot to do with, by the way, asking a child to violate the Shabbos. It's not so simple, because you're giving him a misimpression which he might take through to his godless, you know, through even after Bar Mitzvah. So the Gemara asks, V'litein le'le gadol nachri, why does he have to choose a child amongst the Gentiles? Why not send it with an adult? Asi l'chlufei b'Yisrael. Because somebody may see that they're planting these hops next to a vineyard, and they don't know that the one who planted it was a guy. They saw him from a distance, or he was wearing some sort of mask over his face. They couldn't tell whether he was Jewish or not. Just the people get the impression that even a Jew is allowed to plant hops next to the vineyard. But if you send a katan, then they already, even in the worst case scenario, that they think it was a Jew and not a non-Jew, but nevertheless it's a katan, so that's not so terrible. The third question was, can we bury the dead on Yontif? Mes, Sholach, he sent Lehu back to them. Mes lo yisasku be, you should not get involved with burying the dead on Yontif. Lo yudon v'lo armoyen, neither a Jew nor a non-Jew. Lo biyontif rishon v'lo biyontif sheni, neither on the first day of Yontif nor on what we call Yontif Shein Shel Golius. He gave them a complete answer. And again, as you can anticipate, once again, the Gemara is going to object. What? That's not so. Eini, is that really so? V'omar Rav Yehuda bar Shilat. Omar Rav Asi. Uvda havi v'beik nishta de ma'on. Apparently, Ma'on was a major city, and there were Talmidei Chachamim there, and there was a story there in the synagogue, Biyantiv, HaSomach L'Shabbos. Again, Somach L'Shabbos could either mean that Yontif was on a Friday, or Yontif was on a Sunday. And that would mean that if you don't bury the dead, then it could very well be that the dead will begin to disintegrate after a 48-hour period. So here we turn to Daf Kuf Lamed Tes Amid Beis. Lo yadana imi lefanel lechra. I don't remember exactly the details of the story. It was on a Friday or a Sunday. We also lekami to Rabbi Yochanan. And they came in front of Rabbi Yochanan. He was the Rosh Hashiva, the Gadol Ador, to ask him what to do. Amar lehu yisasku be'amamin. Let the Goyim bury him. The non-Jews will be the grave diggers. And this was clearly on Yontif. So why are you telling me, and you send a word, Rav Mishashi, back to the people, that they're not allowed to bury the dead on Yom Tov? You should have told them that, just get a non-Jewish gravedigger. V'yomar Rava, and to support this position, that there are circumstances in which we will bury the dead on Yom Tov, we have the statement of Rava, Mes b'Yom Tov Rishon Yisasku v'amomim. If somebody dies on the first day of Yom Tov, let the Goyim bury him. B'Yontif Sheni is Asku Bo Yisrael. On the second day of Yontif, Yontif Sheni, even a Jew is allowed to bury the dead. V'afilu B'Yontif Sheni Shal Rosh Hashanah. Even though we have a principle with regard to Rosh Hashanah, that the second day of Rosh Hashanah is Yom HaRichta, it's like a long day. And it's one day, both the first and the second. For example, Mashenki Bebeitza, if an egg was hatched on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, then the normal principle, which applies to any other yontif, any other two-day yontif of yontif shen shagolis, is nolad bezeh muteris bezeh. You can set up a mimon of shach, and one of the two days are not yontif. We're not sure which one, but in Rosh Hashanah we can't do so, because in Rosh Hashanah we have to consider both days as if they're vada yontif. And nevertheless, Rava ruled that on the second day of Rosh Hashanah they'd be allowed to bury the dead. And if I'm not mistaken, don't quote me on this, I think here in Har Nov, this is many, many years ago, there was never an accident, and somebody was killed, and I think they buried him on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. If I'm not mistaken, don't quote me on this. In any event, you see clearly from Rabbi Yochanan, from Rava, that there are heterim, there are leniencies, which allow us to bury the dead on Yontif. So more answers, and we can already write the script on our own, Lefi She'ena B'nei Torah. In other words, they're going to take this as a carte blanche heter, and they're not going to differentiate between the first day of Yontif, the second day of Yontif, between Jewish great divers, and non-Jewish great divers. So we have to be very careful about it. And now at this point, we're going to get back to a discussion about Kila, about the canopy. And the question is, if let's say I want to set up my canopy on Shabbos in a way that I'm allowed to do so, and the problem is that the canopy itself, which is made of like a cloth, has to be moved through a public area, through a public domain. Am I allowed to wear it? And in effect, carry it through wearing it? Because anything that's malbush is not considered a masa. It's not something that you're carrying. Omer av ovin, bar av hun, omer av chama, bar guria, misate, if you're allowed to wrap yourself, odom bekila, with a canopy, ubikas kaseha, and it straps. Now, as far as the cloak itself is concerned, anybody seeing him wearing this canopy would get the impression that he's warming his body, it's derech malbush. But this is really strange. We're talking about kaskaseha. These are the straps. I mean, you know, straps that are attached to a beged, unless they serve the beged and make it more comfortable to tie the beged down to his body. Otherwise, straps, for sure, would be a masa. That's not something that you are wearing. It's something that you are carrying. And yet, Rav Ovin says, there's no problem, neither with the cloak that he's wearing around his shoulders, nor with the strings that are attached to the cloak. So the Gemara immediately objects, Maishna mita Rav Huna. How do you differentiate this between the ruling of Rav Huna? The Amar Rav Huna Amar Rav, Hayotze Vital Shaina Mitsuyetzes Kilchosa Vishabis Chayev Chatos. If you have tzitzis on the corners of your beged and you're wearing that beged in Rosh Hashanah, if you're Yotze the Mitzvah of tzitzis because the tzitzis are Kilchosa, the Ksherim, then that's called part of the beged. The tzitzis are part of the beged insofar as the mitzvah is to put tzitzis on the beged. And you're wearing it, you're not carrying it. But if, let's say, the tzitzis, any of the tzitzis, are posel, then they become attached strings. They're strings and not tzitzis. They're not part of a cheftishol mitzvah, they're not part of tzitzis. And then you're carrying them. Again, you're not carrying them in your hand, but what it means is that anything that's attached to your garment, and it's not part of the mitzvah, is considered a masa. It's as if you're carrying it. I mean, here I would mention the Chiddush of the Minchas Chinuch. The Minchas Chinuch wants to claim that shoes are considered a malvish. We wear shoes in Rosh Hashanah, but only if you're allowed to wear shoes. And if you were to wear leather shoes on Yom Kippur, the Minchas Chinuch wants to claim that perhaps you would violate Masa, you're carrying the shoes, because the Torah cannot recognize these shoes on Yom Kippur, if they're made of leather, as a malbush. And here too, since the tzitzis cannot be recognized as a malbush because they're posel, and now what do you have? You have straps that are attached to the curtains of the canopy. I mean, you're carrying them. So the Gemara answers that we have a halacha called bittel. Tzitzis legabe talis chashivi velo batli, hani lo chashivi ubatli. There are two ways of defining tzitzis as part of the beged. One is because of the mitzvah of tzitzis, if the tzitzis are kosher, and the other is through the mechanism of bittel. Bittel means that it has no significance. It's just like an attachment to the beged. It doesn't have any independent status. Now, in the case of tzitzis, it's impossible to apply the principle of bittel, because the tzitzis are tzitzis, whether kosher or not. You may have to fix them up, but they are tzitzis. And he wants them there as tzitzis. He's not, he doesn't consider the tzitzis a subordinate or insignificant in relationship to the beged. On the contrary, the tzitzis are in a certain sense even more important to him than the beged. But in the case of a cloak, or let's call it the canopy that he's wearing, there we view the straps as secondary, as insignificant. We apply the principle of bittel, and they, the straps, become, so to speak, swept along together with the beged. If the beged is lavush, because he's wearing it, then we don't have to make a big deal about the strings or the straps that are attached to that beged. Now, we had a Mishnah, if you remember, back on Daf Kuf Lamed Zayin, about a strainer. You have a utensil, and you stretch a strainer on top of the utensil. And then you want to pour in the wine to separate the sediments from the pure wine, if you remember that whole discussion we had. Now, the Gemara here wants to know, are there any situations in which you're allowed to suspend this strainer on top of a utensil, and it's not called creating an oil. Omar Rabba Bar Rav Huna, Marim Odom Al Mishameres B'Yontiv Litlos Bar Rimonim V'Tola Boshmorim. Wow. Now you have to underline the word Marim, which is a conjugated verb, the noun of which is Ha'aroma, with a Hey Ayin, Ha'aroma. Got to be a Temani here. Ha'aroma, right? What is Ha'aroma? So in the English translation, I think they translated, if I remember correctly, as subterfuge. What it means is to find like a loophole in the law. And to find a loophole in the law, sometimes you're allowed to, sometimes you're not allowed to. And the general rule is as follows, that if the action that you are doing might be questionable, it might be prohibited because of your intention, then you can ke'ilu declare, even though you're not really serious about it, that your intention is for X instead of Y. So, for example, in our case, you're putting the strainer on top of this utensil. Let's be honest about it. Why are you doing so? Because you want to pour the water onto the strainer. But you're going to make a declaration, no, my intention is to use this strainer as kind of like a shelf, and I'm going to put hard substances, solid white, you know, round substances like a pomegranate, and I'm going to hang it on this strainer. And to our surprise, Rabba allows you to do so, to do this harama, and declare that you're putting up this strainer on Yom Tov for the purpose of holding pomegranates. However, there's a certain limitation, and he only allows it if tole bashmarim. I skipped to Rav Ashi, but we're not yet ready for Rav Ashi, we're only up to Rabba. So Rabba says, in such a case, even though the reason why he set this up is to pour the wine in and get the sediments up on top strained away, nevertheless, he's allowed to do so. But over Rav Ashi adds the contingency for who the tole bashmarim. He's got to first put the pomegranates on it and show us and demonstrate that he really was serious about it. Even again, he has no interest in putting the pomegranates on it, but this is all a matter of justifying his intention. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Are you telling me that the only way that we can allow harama is only when he carries out his fake intention? He's got to actually follow through with it. How is it different than a braisa that says matilin shechar b'moed litzorech hamoed? Now, the halacha is that on chol hamoed, you're not allowed to do malach unless it fits into one of various categories of leniencies, one of which is litzorech hamoed. That certain malachas for food and so forth and so on, you're allowed to do if you need it on chol hamoed. And now, he is brewing beer on chol hamoed, and for sure he's allowed to do this if it's litzorech hamoed, but shelo litzorech hamoed is also. So let's say, for example, he would brew a massive amount of volume of beer, and how much beer can he drink on chol hamoed? That would be prohibited. And the Gemara includes under the category of shechar of beer, echad shechar tmarim, echad shechar siorim. Siorim is our barley beer that are made of hops. And they used to make beer out of dates as well. All these are included in the same rules and leniencies. Afal pi, sheyesh lahem yoshan. He has a stock of beer that's called old beer, that's in his storage house. Nevertheless, marim v'shosim in a chadosh. He's allowed to make believe that his intention is to make beer for yontif, for chol hamoed, when in truth he knows he has an ample supply of beer. And he does this haroma, and he's allowed to do it. He's allowed to brew new beer, knowing full well that he doesn't need this beer. And he can make a statement, you know what, I need this beer. You know, I want the new stock of beer. And there's no indication here that this allowance for subterfuge is conditioned on the fact that he drinks the new beer. So the Gemara says, Hasam lo muchacha milsa, hacha mucha milsa. In the case of brewing beer, nobody knows exactly what storage house how much beer he has of the old beer. And therefore, we're going to allow him to use this haroma as if to say he needs the new beer without any restrictions, without any conditions. But in the case of a strainer, anybody who sees him put the strainer on comes to the automatic conclusion that for sure he's doing it in order to strain the wine, which is prohibited. And therefore, he has to make his subterfuge, his claim that, you know, he needs it for Rimonim, to something real. He has to materialize it, and that's the condition. Amrilu Rabbonin Ravashi, hi Mar, hi Tzumi Rabbonin, Rav Huna ben Rabbi Chayun Shmei. Others say Amrilu was Rav Huna ben Rabbi Chalvan Shmei. And this statement is brought by the students of Rav Ashi to Rav Ashi in the name of some Torah scholar, some Tzumi Rabbonin. Shakal Bra de Tuma, he took a clove of garlic, Umanech bebarza de Dana, and he used it to attach it to a barrel, and a barrel needs an opening, but you have to close up the opening, so you have to plug it up. In fancy English, it's called a spigot. What you do is you plug it up and then you take it out and you bring the liquids out. And the Omar, and he declared, this Talmud Chacham, Latznuye Kamechavna, that my intention was not to plug up this barrel, but rather I looked for a place to hide my garlic, and the fridge was filled, so I put it into this barrel. So he was using a harama, as if to say he's not interested in plugging up the barrel. Ozil v'noim b'mabra, this Talmud Chacham did another harama. And again, the Talmidim are going to bring this to the attention of Rav Ashi and complain and protest. He went to sleep in a boat on Erev Shabbos. Maybe it was on Shabbos. The Avar Lahach Gisa, he knew that the Goyim were going to take this boat and cross the river. And he wanted to take a look at his plantations and his orchards on the other side of the river. The Avar Lahach Gisa, the Seer Peri. And he was able to get a free ride across the river in order to supervise his fruits that were growing there. V'yomar Anah, Lemenam Kamechavna, and he made a declaration, which was Arama, I'm only going to sleep. What do you mean you're going to sleep? Why are you sleeping in a boat? The answer is because you want to get across the boat, and the Goyim are going to carry you across the boat. So once again, a second occasion in which the same Talmud Chacham used Arama, and the Talmidim didn't think that this would fit the Shita of Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi would be happy with it. After all, Rav Ashi was the one, in the case of the strainer, who requires that you demonstrate your intention, your so-called intention, of putting the pomegranates on top of the strainer. Omalohu, so Rav Ashi said to him, Harama ka amrit, harama bidrabananhi. There are two types of harama. There's harama for a doraisa, to circumvent and avoid violation of a Torah law. And then there's harama to avoid a violation of a derabana, of a rabbinic prohibition. So, for example, if we take the case of plugging up a barrel, that's not a violation of a doraisa. It's only derabana. If we take the case of traveling across a river on Shabbos, that's also only a Drabbanon. So we're going to allow a harama on a Drabbanon, but only for a Tzur Mimi Rabbanon. Only a Talmud Chacham is allowed to employ this method called harama on an Isur Drabbanon. And why is that? Lo Asi Lemevid L'Chatchila. Because in a case of harama, we're always afraid that if you allow you to do it by harama, you'll do it even without harama. But that's not so in the case of a Talmud Chacham. Now, this sugya is very important because we don't usually make a distinction in halacha between a Talmud Chacham and someone else. We, generally speaking, institute injunctions and enactments, the Rabbanon and Gzeira, for everybody, and we don't differentiate between one individual and the other. But since we're dealing with the Rabbanon and we're dealing with Harama, where the Iser itself really depends upon his intention, I mean, did he intend to cross the river? Did he intend to plug up the barrel? And the answer is that he can claim that's not what he intended to do. And if he's a Talmid Chacham, we're not afraid that next time he will deliberately do it. And this leads us to the Mishnah here, two-thirds down, on Kuf Lamed Tes Amid Beis. Now, we said that straining wine on Shabbos is prohibited. We had two possibilities as to whether it was Meleches Borer, Meleches Merakeh. And now the question is, are there substances which are edible even without straining, without removing the psoles, and therefore we're going to allow you to do that? It's not called Borer. For example, Nosnim Mayim Al Gavi Shmarim Bishvil Sheit Solu. So we're allowed to pour water over wine. Now we're talking about over Shmarim. Shmarim are the sediments of wine. And as a result of pouring this water, the drugs, the dregs, I should say, meaning these shmarim, are cleared away. So he explains it here in the note. He says the dregs are left in a wine strainer, and they have a certain residue of wine. And we want to extract that residue of wine. That's called, in the language of the Mishnah, Bishvil Sheit Solu. And when he pours the wine through these dregs, which are in the strainer, he causes the water to mix with the dregs, and he separates that residue of wine that are sort of absorbed in the dregs. And that's not considered borer. And perhaps in this case it's not borer because the water itself that he's pouring doesn't need straining. Like, I don't know how many of you may have filters in your kitchen for water. We do. And the question is, are you allowed to use the filter on Shabbos? And that would come under this case because water is drinkable even without filtering it. Now he's doing an unusual way of straining. He strains it not in a kli, but he pours the wine into a cloth. Ubekfifa mitzris, or some sort of a basket that's made of palm twigs. And in all these cases, he is doing an unusual kind of a borer. And he's not using the classic kli, the sifter, which is designated for borer. V'nosnim beitza b'mesanenes shel chardol. He's allowed to pour an egg into a strainer that he used for mustard. And what he wants to do is, if he has the mustard at the bottom of the strainer, and now he wants to put the yellow of the egg, which is otherwise known as the yolk of the egg, into the mustard, it colors the mustard. So he cracks the egg over the mustard strainer, and the white of the egg will remain floating on top. And the yellow of the egg, the yolk of the egg, will go towards the bottom and mix with the mustard. So here, in the Hebrew version, he says, Nosnim he says that he had already strained the mustard on Erev Shabbos, and now he wants to crack an egg over it. And what's his purpose? Hachelmon, that's the yolk, Yerid im hachardol, v'itzpe'eno, that's called the chelmon, v'achelbon, shu'av, apparently it's more thick and sticky, that'll remain on top. And this is not called an Iser Borer. Okay. Finally, the Osin, you're allowed to make Inumlin B'Shabbos. Okay, this is a kind of a composition and a beverage. Okay, we'll see in the Gemara exactly what it is. And you're allowed to prepare this on Shabbos, and without any limitation. So the Tanakhama says you can make volumes of it. It doesn't matter how much. Rabbi Yehuda, on the other hand, Omer, Bishavos, Bikos, we're only going to allow you to make this enumlin in a cup, which is a more limited volume. Okay? Because this is the Isur of Tircha Yisera, not getting involved in too much excessive work. Ubiyanta Belogin. But in the case of Yontif, we're going to be more lenient, and we're going to allow you a lug, which is a larger cup. And b'moed, but if it's only chol moed, then b'chavis, you're allowed to use even a barrel, which is the largest volume. Rabbi Tzadik Omer, kol lefi ha'orchim. Rabbi Tzadik holds, it all depends on how many guests you have. In other words, Rabbi Yehuda was limiting it to this objective cup or barrel and so forth and so on. Rabbi Tzadik says, no, we don't have to limit it to a cup or to a lug. If he has more guests, then it's permissible. Omar Ziri, the Gemara reports that according to Ziri, no Saint Odom Yayin Sol Mayim Tzulim B'Tocha Meshameres B'Shavas Vein Choshesh. He can pour clear wine through the strainer because, again, the clear wine is not full of sediments and therefore it's drinkable. Aval Achurim Lo. But let's say he has murky liquids. For example, his water was murky, or his wine is full of sediments, that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos through a strainer. Meisvei, Rav Shimon Gamliel, and we have a brice that quotes from Shimon Gamliel, Toreid, Adam, Chavish, Al Yayin, Yena, Ushmara. Toreid means to beat, and he's allowed to beat a barrel of wine, and he mixes together the wine together with its sediments. The nosen, and he can pour it into a mishaberes on Shabbos, into a strainer, and he doesn't have to be concerned. So it means that even though he needs straining, apparently this wine is still is like akur, it's got sediments in it, yet nevertheless, the Braisa says in the name of Shimon Gamliel that you're allowed to strain the wine on Shabbos. And Zairi is going to say that there are different times of the year, and it all depends on the season. Tigma Ze'iri Bein Hagitos Shanu. There was a period of time of Bein Hagitos when they sent the grapes to the wine presses to create the wine, to press the grapes. And at that time, it was very difficult to find in the market clear wine. So everybody drank wine with sediments in it. And therefore, to strain it is not a malacha because they would drink it even with the sediments. But in other seasons during the year, people were very particular. They wanted to get pure, unadulterated wine without any mixture of sediments, and therefore it would be a matter of bora. And again, we see the same principle that bora depends upon makpid, what you're makpid about. Misaninin es hayayin besudorim. The Mishnah told us we're allowed to filter wine through cloth. Amar Rav Shimi Bar Chia, he adds a condition of vavad shelo yase guma. He shouldn't make a hole in the cloth. Because once he makes a hole in the cloth, then when he spreads the cloth over the mouth of the container, then it becomes uvdu de chol. It appears as if he's performing an act of borer. Others say that he might come to wring the wine from the cloth and violate meleches schita. The Mishnah says, "Ubekfifa mitzris," you're allowed to strain the wine through a basket made of palm twigs. Amar Rav Chiya Bar Ashi, Amar Rav, ubilvad shelo yagbia mikarko iso shel kli tefach. As long as the bottom of the basket doesn't rise a tefach above the floor, the bottom part of the container, because then he is creating an ohel. Omar Rav, high pronka, a rag that was used to cover a barrel, apalge de kuva shari. You're allowed to put half of it on half of the barrel. Now, the barrel has an opening. But akula kuva us. But if you want to place it on the entire opening of the barrel, that is prohibited. So often a wine barrel would have an accompanying jug which would be used to decant and dispense the wine. One could filter wine through the bother of using a separate strainer by simply packing the filled jug's mouth tightly with straw the like, so that the wine would be filtered when poured. Rav Papa warns us that one should prepare the jug before Shabbos for such use on Shabbos. And if you completely cover the mouth of an upright barrel, that means you're creating an oel. But you're allowed to cover the barrel halfway. Again, whether there's a tefach or not is an issue here. So Amar Papa, as we said before, lo nahadik inish tziniyasa befume dekuzne dechavisa. A person should not pack straw and wood chips in the mouth of a barrel jug. Mishum demechse kimishameres. It looks like he is he's using a wine strainer. And we said before, he had that accompanying jug which we used to decant the wine, and he should filter the wine and not bother with a separate strainer sometimes by simply packing the jug's mouth tightly. And Rav Papa says that he should prepare this jug before Shabbos. The straw and wood chips mixture appears as a wine strainer, although it will not catch the wine sediments, but it does serve to filter out the larger pieces of debris in the wine as effectively as a wine strainer. Debei Rav Papa shafu shikra mimone lemona. In the house of Rav Papa, they would pour beer slowly from one vessel to the other. So it means by pouring the beer out, then the first vessel will now hold on to the dregs. But what about the fact that when you get to the bottom of the pouring out, then you're going to slow down and make sure that the dregs will stay behind in the first kli? I mean, that should be considered borer. And the answer is nitzotzos lebei Rav Papa lo chashivi, that these kinds of drippings in the household of Rav Papa were insignificant. He didn't bother collecting the drippings from amongst the dregs, so he wouldn't separate that little mounts of wine from the dregs, and therefore he was not over borer. So we'll stop here on the bottom of Kuf Lamed Tes Amud Beis, V'nosnin Beitza B'misanenes.